the mound. Urban's got it. Nobody's covering second base.
I saw this right. Did Jeff Francoeur get this and throw it straight in the ground? He had a little stumble here. And that's the shortest throw you'll ever see. He just missed the cutoff, man.
Look at the phone. It's off the hook. Look at that slow. He's going to use the towel. This is a bad night.
Pitcher.
He's warming it up.
When the uniforms turned powder blue, the edge dropped off, and the sweet smell of success turned sour.
The Fanatic, his hot dog shooting gun, that's 98 miles an hour of compressed meat headed right at your noggin.
Welcome to the Dirty
Hello.
End. Lot of great baseball, a lot of great baseball stuff out there we want to go over.
Do you know that a year is happening? We're actually going to have baseball.
What a absolute just fucking cool day for sports and conversations it was on Tuesday, July 7th, the evening of which we are recording this episode.
Mike Trout betrayed his team along with someone else. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. It was a great day for sports. It was 10 a.m. We had gotten a Philadelphia, I guess, Inquirer columnist who put out a column saying that players should go to work, that they should not really think about their health. And what's great about this is that this was like one of those columnists who, and I'm not saying his name on purpose because I'm trying to continue the trend I saw today, which was that this column was essentially ignored. This column was put out into the world to be like a troll job to get reactions from people because they knew it would have a very strong online reaction. And this is someone whose job is to essentially write a column like this every other week. And you can tell there's some personal beliefs that make it into each one of these columns, but largely it's just played up and in general is just a waste of everybody's time and is just very stupid. But this included a quote that was this kind of sums it up. Yeah, you might miss a birth or the first few weeks of your kid's life or back to school 2020, but you will be protected and you will be tested and you will be doing your job. That's incredible. The payoff for missing the birth of a child. You get the satisfaction of doing your job. First of all, you will not be protected. I don't know if anyone's aware of baseball's testing strategy.
You will not be protected at all.
All teams spit in a tube, and that spit gets magically teleported to one lab in Salt Lake City where, oh, and they're not springing for Sunday or like critical service with FedEx. They're not springing for you know, the highest possible service. So it doesn't get delivered on Sundays. So...
It's
like the bullets
so
next
wild.
To the delivery options, and it was just like $7.99. It could get there in 3 to 4 days. $11.99 could get there.
I can do the free,
1 or 2 days.
It'll be 9 to 10 days, but I'll get a free credit for an audiobook. The players are gonna love that.
These jackass dipshit morons just clicked the standard shipping. Yeah, it'll get there in 12 days. What's the problem? And and now nobody wants to practice because they aren't getting their test results back, might have COVID and don't know it. And this jabroni at the Inquirer was like, everyone should go to work because going to work is cool, I think.
The end of this column, I didn't even realize that this ink-stained wretch wrote this. You see this? See what I did there?
Nice.
Yeah, thanks. It makes total sense that he did because he's a total plague on writing.
He's just a loser. Like he just comes across like a total loser.
The worst, absolute worst person. Just I've never read a column by him that's been good. But I've unfortunately read a lot of his columns because of what I do sometimes. But so the last bit of this column is so bad, where it's like he starts. If Reese Hoskins were to sit out, he would forfeit about $225,000. Which would account for about 12% of his career earnings. Of course, Hoskins is probably a bad example, since he played through the Black Plague, the Spanish Flu, and the Inquisition. Okay?
How in the hell could you say that? That's absurd. That's like those guys who've been throwing out the columnists who've been throwing out the, like, oh, the players don't want to play for millions of dollars. I'd play for $1.50. Like, that's because it's my dream. Like, first of all, no, you fucking wouldn't. You wouldn't do that.
Everyone around you is getting millions. Like, how much are you getting?
I'm a grown ass person. You don't get insurance and you're getting $1.50 to play a full baseball season. Well, I can't do that. I have a family. Oh, that's crazy because you said that the love of the game would be enough.
Wheeler's pending decision is fascinating to watch. He's made about $14 million, and he just signed a five-year, $118 million a year deal with the Phillies that net him a prorated $8 million this season. That would be more than one-third of his career earnings. Of course, he'd have about $105 million left in the deal, but who knows what tomorrow brings. A guaranteed contract. Because, folks, there's a good chance we don't have a vaccine by spring training 2021, or even by next summer. What then, Mike Trout?
Oh, yeah, checkmate, dumbass.
What happens if we're at the same place?
Get out there!
This is so. This is the best part. I've got to be there. If I test positive, I can't see the baby for 14 days. Trout said last week, we would be upset. End quote. Heaven forbid Mike Trout should be upset.
Oh boy!
If you are the Angels, literally that should be like above your door, like as it like in Friday Night Lights, where it's like big hearts are like. Oh,
yeah.
What is that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've watched that whole show. I should be able to do that. But you
only
know,
it's encouragement to not play.
Like, no, it just says like instead of clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. It just says heaven forbid Mike Trout should be upset. Like that should literally be like the team logo and name. The band should chant it. Like your player who might be the best player of all time in baseball shouldn't be upset. He should be happy all the time. Like, that's the point. Like
that he gets to play baseball.
Yeah, just, no,
who
no,
cares like, if his child was born without him there?
No, no, it's no. Just, no, what I'm saying is, like, you should do anything to make him happy. Like, if it's, I don't want to play because I might miss the birth of my child, you say, like, okay, do you want anyone to play? Like, would it be better if the Angels just, like, sat out this season? Should we forfeit? Mike, what do you think? Like, just... These 60 games don't matter. Just make Mike Trout happy. He's going to be there for like 10 years. It's not.
They don't matter.
Cares.
they do not matter at all.
Yeah, they don't matter at all.
The way this whole thing is a shit show now. Imagine it when they start playing baseball. Imagine
it's gonna be so bad.
They're gonna be like, okay, tomorrow Aaron Nola is starting, and then like, whoops, Aaron Nola got exposed to somebody. He's actually out for 7 days automatically. So that means, I guess Zach Wheeler's. Crap. He had like developed a dry cough and wasn't feeling well. So he's actually going to be on COVID injured reserve for at least 14 days. So
he's back, baby, and he's playing every position.
Zach Eflin pitched yesterday, so he can't go. what are we doing?
Oh
so
man,
it was by 10 a.m. we had that column, which again was ignored because of the next thing that happened.
Can I read the one last thing of this column?
Sure.
Want to protect your family when teams have begun to draffle? Fine. Rent an apartment or crash with a teammate, but get up, go to work, do your job, come home, wash your hands, and wear a mask, damn it. Create the bubble your union was too short-sighted to create for you.
Yeah, that union, there was a very anti-bubble sentiment in the Major League Baseball players.
I thought that was a really like short-sighted thing to do, to say that we will absolutely give in to any of the demands of Major League Baseball, but we will never have a bubble.
Yeah. That was foolish. Foolish and irresponsible, honestly.
Yeah, it seems weird.
I'm really enjoying that there's like these it's like watching someone try to jumpstart a dead battery in a car. Like the narrative of you get up and you go to work because a man is a man and that's what a man does. And like people are trying to kind of make that into like massage that into the conversation, but even that is like too fucking stupid to make it into the conversation right now, which is hilarious because very little is. But by 10 a.m. this morning, we had this column, which was, again, delightfully ignored, despite the attention it was begging to have, because unfortunately for this writer, DeSean Jackson pretty much dominated the news today. And so that naturally dominated sports news cycle, especially in our little Philadelphia pocket. But also, again, by 10 a.m., we had those two things, and we also had a delightful column from Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic, given whose opinion about the COVID-affected 2020 Major League Baseball season have we not had yet, Trev? Who have we not heard from?
The fans.
Keep in mind, I'm going to give you another guess. Keep in mind,
thank God,
that this is someone we don't really want to hear from.
Oh, I know who I never want to hear from. Call it Joe West.
Umpire Joe West got an interview with Ken Rosenthal, which was like brief enough to a brief enough article. It really is very, very short that clearly this was done just for the sake of filling space. Like, who can we talk to just to get some new content up? And that was like, oh, we'll talk to Joe West. And this article is about Joe West saying, his money quote that you saw everywhere was Joe West saying, if the game hasn't got me by now, no virus is going to get me. And that's the narrative he wants out there, where I'm Joe West, I'm so tough. And then he tells a story about calling Dan Halem of Major League Baseball, who he says expected him to say he was going to sit out the season because he's 67 and he's at high risk of catching.
You probably
COVID.
Shouldn't just like wander around the field with like your gut hanging out in order mm-hmm. to
constantly getting involved in human interactions, you know,
and always up close to people because you've made horrible calls and they're yelling at you.
Right. And so like, but his whole narrative was, oh, I called Dan Halem and said, I am going to play. And he said that Dan Halem was so surprised that he had said that. And so it was like, I'm really tough. Look how surprised and how tough I am. Everyone is. And then, of course, he also said, I don't believe in my heart that all these deaths have been from the coronavirus. I believe it may have contributed to some of the deaths. I said, I'm not going to opt out. I'm going to work, and I'm going to work until you take me off the field or I get hurt, whatever. I'm working. First of all, you can believe whatever you want in your heart, but if you get COVID, your heart is actually going to literally be affected by that. So
it's a blood disease. It's not good.
You probably shouldn't, you know, rely on your heart like that in the wake of a pandemic that will affect it, literally. Also,
honestly, like, the amount of people who think that you can just say, like, I don't believe in this is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible to be like, yeah, I don't believe. Like, this isn't true.
Yeah. Yeah. So just
incredible.
Just another little tidbit of how fucking stupid baseball is about this. And, you know, it's not surprising to hear this perspective from Joe West, who, again, we shouldn't know who Joe West is. We should not know what his name is.
Angel Hernandez, Joe West, all of these people. Like, just, you know.
And yet here we have Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, the most prominent sports media outlet in the country, seeking Joe West out to get these quotes, knowing that they were going to be like this, just to put it up there so we can learn that Joe West, get this, thinks he's too tough for the coronavirus. Brilliant.
It's like, it's bizarre to me that, like, I don't know, like, I guess it's not, but it's strange to me that, like, the way that clickbait news happens is that, like, you have to do this. Like, you can't just be like, okay guys, there's nothing to write, we have to, like, let's just, like, do a retrospective or something. Like, you know, as much as I don't like the content on MLB.com, like, okay, I get why you'd be like, okay, let's re-rank the 2008 MVP votes. Like, okay, that's just content you could use instead of, you know, asking some angry old man what he thinks about COVID. Like,
and like a dumb.
Yeah, on the record, sir, like, you've been yelling at me for the past hour because you've been yelling at me the past hour about the fifth columnists you know about in your neighborhood. Would you go on the record about that for theathletic.com? My name is Ken Rosenthal.
Yeah, so it's just a needless bit of perspective from a man who apparently believes that the COVID is not responsible for as many deaths as you've seen, and believes that if baseball hasn't killed him by now, then a pandemic that has killed over 125,000 people in the United States alone isn't going to kill him. So just wonderful, brilliant, and incredibly necessary insight from a man who, again, we should not know the name of.
It also was a really good day for people quote tweeting my Stephen A. Smith quote at me. Literally it was a great moment of someone saying but to the Holocaust. I did see a tweet someone said on sports radio today. I thought it was our friend of the podcast, Paul Benson Sucks, but I don't know. I couldn't find it, but they were saying that on Philly radio, a caller called it and said, like, now look, I completely agree that Hitler is a bad person and my best friend is Jewish, but
so good. It was great. It was literally Twitter's greatest hits being replayed in real life before our eyes, because it was that at the beginning, and then DeSean Jackson's apology was literally the drill tweet of look,
you don't have to hand it to him.
Under no circumstances do you gotta hand it to him. It was incredible. Yeah, when I say incredible, I mean just a really demoralizing day on Twitter again. But there are three pillars of demoralization for this particular Tuesday. Again, by 10 o'clock in the morning, the day was ruined.
it's just absolutely an incredible day. And like, it's funny. I don't know. It's just funny being on Twitter and seeing like actual baseball players being able to tweet about this too. Like Sean Doolittle is a good person to follow for this. And like, will often tweet very honestly about this stuff. Like it's just always wild to see like actual employees tweet back at their bosses and be able to say like, I disagree, like the and big and small, like the local business near haircuttery barber near us, the owner tweeted a picture of his automatic assault rifles and said like, Antifa rioters aren't going to get my shop tonight. And like all of his employees were like, please don't listen to him, I need your tips, like I don't agree with this man. But like on the national level, having people like tweet at reporters or like owners and be like, shut up, dude. Like, you don't have to be out. It's the one best thing. Like, it's the one best thing about Twitter.
Yeah, it's a real confusing. Everybody should be on there less, I would say. That's not going to help.
Even if you've never logged on, you've somehow spent more time.
Yeah, it's. I know the word toxic gets thrown around a whole lot to the point of cliche, but it's the best word to describe it, frankly, until we come up with another one.
Oh, yeah.
So this is The Dirty Inning, a podcast where we talk about the dumbest, funniest, or most obscure innings in Philadelphia Phillies history, and we are going to do that this time. We've just adopted a fun little banter segment at the beginning.
Yeah, because our last banter segment went so well, as joking around and having fun with each other. Everyone said
almost no one told me to shut the hell up this week.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And like, and I saw that your 46th inning tweet was on someone's best of list. So.
Oh, that's nice. That's wonderful.
I know you care so much about that.
What a great week for our Twitter footprints, Trev. We are gonna talk about a particular Phillies inning. And Trev, before we take our first break here, why don't you just give us a hint or just a summary of what we're going to talk? Because this is going to be one of those episodes where Trev narrates the story.
Yeah, so it's going to be a little different. I tried to do Justin's patented having been a journalist move of just, you know, going through and finding articles on LexisNexis and stuff about this guy that we're going to talk about. It is very funny, this person, because – so I'll start off by telling you why I thought about this person. It's a 2008 Philly, but I have to tell you, it is a 2008 Philly I have never heard of. And so this is from Matt Culpa, whose Twitter name is @mculpa, K-U-L-P-A 18. He messaged me and said, hey, Trevor, I have a suggestion for a dirty inning, and it's one name, two words. Now, I'm not going to say what the name is because I really want to know if Justin or anyone has heard. I want to tease this a little bit more. He came into a game for the Phils in 07 to 08 and threw a few wild pitches before leaving. I have a personal story about it, too, but I'd love for you guys to check it out. So, of course, I said, yeah, tell me the personal story. And it's about a terrible tragedy. No, just kidding. He said, please don't share this on air. And so I thought, this is a perfect episode. Awesome. So this is him. I was born in 2001, which just made me crumble to dust, but that's okay.
I'm sorry. Is that legal?
No. I think it's a typo.
Yeah, that's got to be wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I think he means 1981. So
right. Nothing else makes sense.
No. You can't be born any later than 1985. Sorry, Justin.
I was going to say, oh, crap. I got bad news.
Yeah, well, sorry that you were born a year before me in 1984. So he was about 6 to 7 when this all happened. My dad worked nights as a paramedic near Camden, so me and my mom would watch Phillies games together whenever he wasn't home. He's a big fan too, though. So one night he's at work and the Phillies are playing. It's the 7th or 8th inning. I believe they were in the old Marlins Stadium. The Phils bring in the pitcher we'll be talking about. I'd never heard of him at the time, but I knew the big names like Howard, Utley, Hamels, Rollins, etc. This pitcher blows it. He throws a bunch of wild pitches awfully. So the next day I was telling my dad about him, and he didn't believe me. For years, he thought I'd made the guy up. It got to the point where I thought, started to think I was the only person who had known about him. But I found him, and he's awful. I finally showed it to my dad, and I've never felt so right.
Wow. I mean, there's... So, the first person that came to mind is someone I cannot remember the name of, but I know, like, the idea of this picture is in my head, and I feel like I've talked about him somewhere on one of these shows. And
it might be him. I've never heard this name before.
And it was, yeah, it was somebody who I was surprised. I hadn't heard of him. But again, clearly it wasn't super memorable because I don't even remember the name. So I'm very eager to get to the bottom of this. So okay. let's take our first break. And when we come back, we'll get the ball rolling on our actual dirty inning. Well, we're back on the dirty inning, and Trev is going to tell us what 2008 Forgotten Philly is at the center of the inning we will discuss in this episode.
I am, and it is Tulsa, Oklahoma's, I'm sorry, Muskogee, Oklahoma's favored son, Mr. Les Walrond.
Nope, have no idea who that is. Les also, when you Walrond. Started talking, I thought you were actually going to tell me that someone named Tulsa, Oklahoma pitched for the Phillies. I thought the first words out of your mouth were going to be the name. And when you said Tulsa, I was like, a person named Tulsa.
I hope that if I said that, you would have called me a liar to my face. Like,
I was about to call you a liar. Yes.
There's no way there was a pitcher named Tulsa, Oklahoma that I've never heard of. How dare you? I have to admit, information on Les Walrond is, there's not a lot of it. The funniest thing about him, though, is he was a 2008 Philly, and I feel like most of the 2008 Phillies are, like, household names. Looking through the play log for this game and trying to figure out what I'd be talking about, like, literally every player on here is someone that I wouldn't even think to mention, because, like you go to the lineup, Jimmy Rollins, Shane Victorino, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Pat Burrell, Jeff Jenkins may be kind of interesting to talk about as a guy who was there in 08 and then wasn't in the later years. Bruntlett, Carlos Ruiz, and Jamie Moyer. It's a Phillies podcast, so even Eric Bruntlett, who is like the biggest nobody here, I just refer to as his last name because it's like, of course everyone knows who that guy is. And they're playing the Marlins in this. So this is the date we're going to be talking about is August 5th, 2008. So late in the year. And as we know, like a tight race down the stretch in 2008. So by no means not important as a game. But like, you know, pitching for them that day was Josh Johnson. And the lineup was Hanley Ramirez, Jeremy Hermida, Jorge Cantu, Josh Willingham, Mike Jacobs, Dan Uggla, John Baker, Alfredo Amezaga, and Josh Johnson. I mean, these are just names you know if you've been watching the Phillies. I think like since
no, you're right. I was like, okay, but like were a lot of these guys good? Is that why I remember? No, it's just from watching the Phillies play them.
Yeah,
because you didn't miss an inning that year.
And like honestly, like a lot of these Marlins were there for a while. Like Willingham was not a Marlin the next year, but he was a National, so effectively he was still around. And like even like Alfredo Amezaga, not good, but always there. And like even the pitching, right? Like there are some people in the Florida Marlins pen who are a little questionable. Although Arthur Rhodes was there, which I thought was funny. These games are really funny to look for people who are like, I have two. I'll reveal why I have a second game a little later. But a lot of them are funny because you get to think about when they were Phillies, like the other players in the games, because they almost always are Phillies later. The Phillies bullpen, Clay Condrey, Les Walrond, Ryan Madsen, and Jay Happ. Like it's just household names. Like there's not like weird trivia I can come up with these people. You know these people, right?
Which operating in the corner of the Phillies universe that we do, you'd think we would be, I don't know, just able to pull that name out of somewhere because he's like the one guy from, you know, Jay Happ, Ryan Madsen. Obviously, we know them. Les Walrond's name in there. That's exactly the situation. I'm looking at it and I'm just like, all right, who's this guy? What's his deal? I'm going to do a couple archival searches on this one.
Yeah. And there's like, there's not a lot of good information on it. So a lot comes from his Wikipedia. And then I'll tell you a little bit about his rise through the minors. Cause it's sort of interesting. He's a very particular sort of guy that I think you'll recognize if you've ever really cared about minor league players. But, So he was a lefty, which of course, you know, helped his career. He played in 23 major league games, 21 games in relief, two starting. That's important. And he also played in the NPB for the let's see, who did he play for? I thought he played for the Yokohama Bay Stars. He played at Booker T. Washington High School under the I love his Wikipedia. I'm gonna read some of it out loud, just like straight up, because I'm pretty sure he wrote it. And I love Wikipedias that are written by.
Well, the Les Walruns of the world, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, they can do that.
Yeah.
And I've come across Wikipedia articles like that. I don't use Wikipedia for like the central narratives of these guys a whole lot, because, you know, it's Wikipedia. But like, you can always tell when somebody who like has like six career innings in Major League Baseball has like a 12 paragraph summary of their career, and you're like, oh, this is just every game this person pitched in. That's something interesting in here. And you're like, oh, I see. He certainly wrote this. Got it.
I love this one because it has information that no one could ever know. he played at Booker T. Washington High School. Okay. Under the tutelage of Coach Corey Slagle.
The Corey Slagle.
Oh, okay. Got it. With Walrond Ault anchoring the baseball team, Booker T experienced an athletic renaissance that included New York Giants defensive back R.W. McCorders and Washington Wizards center Etan Thomas.
Should I know those names? I'm sorry.
they're very forgettable.
Okay.
R.W. McCorders played on the 2007 Giants, who beat the Patriots. If that
I was going to say, I kind of, that does.
McCorders is a McCorders very, is a very recognizable name.
It's a great name. And yeah, honestly, nothing against these guys. It's just like seeing them quoted as though they are the Mount Rushmore.
An athletic renaissance. That's, I mean, at Booker T. Washington High School, I guess.
yeah.
He was, he went through a bunch of teams. You don't have to know all of them. It's kind of, you know, it's a typical sort of minor league journeyman sort of thing where, like, you know, he pitched from 2003 to 2010, and he was never on a team for more than a year, except with the Cardinals, who had drafted him in the 13th round. So, like, yeah, it's pretty typical. But the saddest paragraph is so let me tell you, he was sent down by the Phillies in August 2008 after this game, obviously, well after this game, and following the activation of Pedro Feliz from the disabled list, which is just, you know, its own baby shoes rarely used sad story, but this is the saddest paragraph I've ever read about a baseball player. In 2011, Walrond paid for his own airline ticket to the Mets spring training camp, where he was signed to a minor league contract. Les pitched well during the big league camp, but became ill before the break of camp. Unfortunately, Les was waived by the Mets.
Aww.
He paid his own way. That's so the sad.
Mets, the Mets brought a guy to camp and made him pay his own way.
That's like, so sad.
That's honestly, that's sadder for the Mets. I'm gonna say that
it's really rough. Like, why would you do that to a person?
Stupid Mets. God, they're such, they act like they're this penniless independent league minor operation, and they're a professional baseball team.
Oh, sorry, like, guys, we're gonna have to our pockets are a little empty this time. Les, can you right, pay for you your can, you own can plane come, ticket?
You gotta pay your own way. And if you have any of this pizza, you better pay me back tomorrow.
Southwest right? has a great sale. I think it's gonna be fine.
You're going to get down here, you're going to sleep in your car, you're going to bring your A game to the field the following morning, pitching in the clothes you slept in. We will not feed you, and then you get back on a plane immediately that you again have paid for.
And
to take
maybe,
you home.
Maybe you get a minor league contract.
Maybe you don't get an automated email telling you the result of your trial. Maybe, maybe. If we have paid to upkeep that service.
And you'll only be getting slightly better treatment than David Wright, so don't push it. So Walrond was like, I like Walrond a lot because he reminds me of, and we brought these guys up on the show a lot, but he reminds me a lot of the way that we talked about, like, like the fourth or fifth guy just behind the Baby Aces in, like if John Pettibone had never had a cup of coffee, like we'd think about John Pettibone. He actually sort of is a John Pettibone type, but Pettibone pitched a lot more. Like if you do a LexisNexis search on Les Walrond, you actually get a lot of results. But a lot of it is just like transaction reports or whatever. And a lot of them are when, it'll be when he was pitching for the Cubs in 06, when he was sort of like an up and coming guy, maybe like a reclamation project, or when he's with St. Louis, when he like, he was a prospect. So like in, I think this was, what is this? 2000, July 19th, 2000. When he was, it was in his second year of professional baseball. This is from Rick Scherer, special to the Washington Post. Taking the direct approach of throwing strikes and using his defense, Potomac pitcher Les Walrond has transformed himself into one of the most dominant pitchers in the Class A Carolina League. After going 7-10 with a 5.70 ERA last year with Lower A Peoria, Walrond, a left-hander, is 7-2 with a 3.14 ERA for the Cannons. Walrond's streak of 20 and one-third innings without giving up an earned run, a team high this season, ended last night as he gave up 5 earned runs in 5 and two-thirds innings against Lynchburg. Walrond did not figure in the decision, however. Let's see. Skip. He thought he was an outfielder, and then a pro scout in his junior year of high school said he wouldn't make it further than Double A as an outfielder, so he became a pitcher, which...
He said that to him.
Yeah, he said that to Les Walrond.
Creating the change. Okay, gotcha.
Very, very nice thing to say to someone.
A very scout thing to say to someone.
Hey, you suck. But if you did this, you might suck less.
Have you ever played a different position? Well, do that, and maybe you'll get one of these real cool Mets automated emails you may have heard about.
I have one. It's on my phone. It's still painted off to the Mets.
I have it framed behind my desk. It says I don't work for the Mets anymore.
I love that in 2000 the same cliches still worked, though, where like Walrond, a 13th round pick of the St. Louis Cardinals, quickly has made a name for himself using mainly a fastball, curveball, and changeup. He mixes his pitchers and constantly keeps hitters off balance. He's got a chance one of these days to be a big league pitcher, Potomac manager Joe Cunningham said. Being left-handed, the door is wide open in the big leagues. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter his whole career, but at least he's going to get innings and learn how to pitch. They pay left-handed pitchers millions of dollars to get one or two hitters out a game.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, you know, the hype is still visible. If you search his name on Twitter, you can see people like...
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Dan Gelston of the Associated Press saying I was a big Les Walrond guy in response to somebody talking about... You know, baseball, and
apparently he was a good prep pitcher. That's what I've heard.
He was, but yeah, you know, I also don't know if that's being sarcastic, because you also see him brought up as the same reason we're talking about him, because he's obscure.
Yes,
because he's
sure.
Part of a famous team and extremely obscure. But even then, he comes up a lot, in that context.
There's a weird. I only know it because of when I was reading comics. But there was a weird Marvel comic in like the. I think the early 2000s, based on when I was reading a lot of comics, where the premise, I think it was called The Sentinel. And the premise was there was this extremely famous, like central, like the Superman essentially of the Marvel universe in the 60s. And then in order to stop a horrible thing happening, he made himself not exist anymore in the minds of people. So he was just kind of like this guy down in his luck, and no one knew that he was like the most important superhero in the world. And so it just kind of like went from there. Les Walrond sort of strikes me like that, where like, no one knows who he is, but you can search back and see like a bunch of people in history talking about this guy no one's thought about. Like, oh, okay. Les Walrond, you say?
tells you the nature of baseball analysis, where it was just like, oh yeah, you know, back in the day it was like, these are the guys in the major league team, and you know, maybe you get a mention in the paper if you're somebody the team is acquiring, not if they're just like looking at you and stuff. Right. But like Les Walrond was coming up at a time where everyone was like, who's this guy? What's his deal? What's his like whole deal? What pitches does he throw?
Where'd
how
he come
good
from?
Is he gonna be? What have the scouts said about him?
Does
am
he
I
know
a scout?
RW
what
reporters?
Am I saying about him? Yeah. Like and so he comes up a lot because he was part of a bunch of young players for the Phillies. I mean, Jason Greeley has a tweet from 2011 where he references himself as Rocky Balboa and Les Walren as Apollo Creed. And I have no idea what the context of this is. It's not replying to anything. It's just him saying, Greeley, me, a.k.a. Rocky Balboa, and Les Walren, a.k.a. Apollo Creed, keep the conditioning after BP on point. Or did they have a boxing match? I don't know.
Weird. Okay, cool. I mean, Walren's also just like a weird duck. Like another 2000 article. This is the same season he did a good job. This is by Preston Williams, also of the Washington Post, whose writing style is a little weird. Les Walren's collegiate and professional pitching stints have been a real walk in the park, and therein lies the problem. At the University of Kansas, Walren issued 78 walks in 96 innings. His first 2 years in the Cardinals organization, the left-hander walked 83 batters in 161 innings. This made for a who's on first routine his instructors did not find funny.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that at all.
Okay, well,
I'm not going to lie.
Do you want more? Although Walren is still susceptible to an occasional lapse of command, this summer he walked just 30 batters in 95 innings, a turnaround of almost typographical error proportions. just
man,
keep it going.
This guy was in the zone that day.
mostly quotes from there, but the funniest thing about it is, so is his manager's basically like, yeah, he just like tries to outthink himself as long as he can, like, if he stays in his own head, it's fine, but like, you know, it's good. But he says in his notebook he keeps, Walren, 23, gives himself a letter grade after each outing. The marks would not necessarily land above the deeds list, despite a 6-2 record and 3.03 ERA. I've been pretty tough on myself, says Walren, who pitched a string of 16 consecutive scoreless innings this season. I've only gotten one A so far, and I've gotten two or three Bs, but the rest have been Cs and Ds.
Ooh,
end of
that's
article.
A bummer. That's Vince Velasquez used to come out and give, I mean, he's still on the team, but he would come out and give, you know, quotes to reporters, and he had a lot of messy starts, and he would not hold back. And I'm probably even more critical than even what Les Walren just said in that quote. But yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it's just,
Les.
It's like, a drag. I mean, so the funny thing about, and I'll just a couple more stops, and then I guess we can take our third break, and I'll go through the inning. But like the, it's weird actually doing this as the lead person. You don't know how much time you've taken up. How do you do this every week? It's terrible. What a horrible job you have.
Well, I know how numbers work.
They're not me.
And how clocks work.
I don't understand anything.
And then I just go from there. So it's, you know, it's not super hard.
All right, well, we'll talk after this about clocks. I don't think anyone else is super interested in them, but I certainly am. The thing about Walren is he still had hype after. So the Cardinals left him unprotected in a Rule 5 draft, and I saw somewhere, although it is really funny. Oh yeah, I saw it on Roto World because I looked up Les Walren on Roto World, and the first Les Walren thing in 2003 is just Les Walren, relief pitcher, St. Louis Cardinals. False. March
20th. Oh, no. Oh, that's a bummer. That's like when we're going through the play-by-play for really old baseball games, and Baseball Reference knows enough to know the outcome of a play, but not what the play was, and just says, like, unknown play, out. And you're like, okay. But in this case, it's like, the player, false. No.
Does not exist.
Denied. 404.
But the actual... The actual real first update is that the Cardinals designated him for assignment to get Esteban Yan, the immortal Esteban Yan. Good thing they got him on the 40-man, on the 40-man roster. Walren is a decent relief prospect, so he might not make it through waivers. He did. And later the Cardinals cut him. He ended up on the Royals for a tick, and then on to the Cubs. And so when he was... on a Cubs affiliate, he I think he actually played in Korea briefly before he went to the Cubs, which is interesting for 2005. But in any case, he in 2005 in the Santa Fe New Mexican, in an article by the New Mexican, which is my new superhero. It was a historic day for Les Walrent. Even better, it was a winning one. Walrent became the first pitcher in Albuquerque Isotopes history to pitch 2 9-inning shutouts in one season, blanking the Memphis Redbirds 1-0 Sunday afternoon in PCL League Baseball at AutoZone Park. So, like, he 3 hits in over 9 innings, walking 1, striking out 6. I mean, this is like a he pitched against Bill Pulsifer, who I feel like we've talked about in the show. Everyone else is may as well be on the back of a milk carton, as far as I'm concerned. Josh Kinney, Chris Aguila, Jason Wood. I don't know if that name sounds familiar. It's just generic. Matt Padgett.
These are names that sound like they could be someone.
These are the names that were in Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball.
Right,
They couldn't afford the other players.
M. Padgett, J. Wood,
C. Yeah. Gissel. Albuquerque says it's ace Frank Castillo? Question mark. Who knows?
The guy who does all the impressions for Fox NFL Sunday.
He was an ace before he decided he would just be a comedian who did bad impressions. But in any case, he pitched his second 9-inning shutout. So, like, you don't even have to squint to be kind of excited about him. Like, it's cool.
It's going to get you attention, especially with how many people are, like, watching the minors for prospects worth noting and want to be the first one to bring a prospect to your attention.
And I'll talk a little bit about Walren's one start with the Cubs. I don't know if he had another start with the Cubs, to be honest with you. I am not entirely positive. But he had 2 starts in his major league career. I think only 1 with the Cubs. But I will tell you a little bit more about that a little bit later. But fast forward to my last news article that I thought was worthwhile, written by David Murphy. Phillies Notebook. Phillies welcome plenty of experience to spring training. February 24th, 2009. Names such as Mike Koplov, Blaine Neal, Pablo Ozuna, and Dave Borkowski may not seem like the most obvious ways to improve a team coming off a World Series victory, but bolstering veteran depth at the top levels of the minor league system was one of the top priorities for new general manager Ruben Amaro Jr. this offseason. The difference is noticeable. When the Phillies began spring training last season, only 8 of their 22 non-roster invitees had big league experience. This season, that number jumped to 16 of 23. Last year, the pitchers invited... that's the correct answer. The pitchers invited to Phillies camp had 431 games of big league experience among them. This year, they have 960 games of experience. You can gasp again. And it goes on from there. Those figures are before the Phillies signed... I love this as if it's like before the Phillies pulled off this coup. And those figures are before the Phillies signed 13-year veteran infielder Miguel Cairo to a minor league contract last week.
It almost feels like punching down. It's not. Like, it's punching backwards.
Yeah, it's so bad. Even for the most talented of major league clubs, inventory is an important word. It's a really weird sentence.
I don't think so.
It doesn't seem super important, but okay.
I don't think that gets brought up at all, actually.
Even for the most talented of major league clubs, people are always saying inventory.
Matt Klenchak gets the mic and it's all he can talk about. I mean, inventory. We're just canning prospect after prospect.
I love
putting
to call
them in our emergency stash.
I love to call the people I sign to contracts and assure are important parts of our team inventory.
Like, I know what you mean by that, but that is not a term that they use at all. It's just not the word.
No, no one's ever used the word inventory for this. I don't.
Oh, well. Someone, a key player was hurt this week, so we're going to check our inventory and see what's available.
We have one of our GMs doing inventory tonight, so hopefully we'll be able to account for everything.
This man who makes millions upon millions of dollars is doing inventory.
I consider these other men who make millions of dollars stock. Hopefully we haven't lost any Zach Wheelers in the night, but we'll have to see. Theft
who
is
knows?
On the rise.
We had a car drive into our stock room the other night, so we got it. God only knows what's in there now.
last year's six position players who began the season in the minor leagues got at least two at-bats during the season. Remember when this was like a big, like, concern in Phillies Twitter and media? I think it was like from 2009 to even like 2012, where they're like, what if there are injuries? We don't have people who've played in the majors. As if, like, we really wanted Miguel Cairo to have to pick up slack at third base.
Like, I get it. You can make the argument that a quad A guy, you know, that's the reason they have a job. But also, we're having this conversation in 2020 when minor leaguers have been devalued beyond belief at this point. Yes. Where, like, you know, the conversation is, will there be minor leagues again? Are these minor leaguers getting paid for the job they have, for the career they've chosen?
Sorry, you guys have to do your job, as some would say, but also we don't have to pay you.
Well, they keep getting a stipend, you know, like an intern. Will they be on one of the teams that the decision is made that they will continue to get paid for their job
because
something out of their control has happened? So, you know, you have that question in here. It's just like, well, this guy hasn't played in the majors before. How are we going to make this work? So, like, I get it. Quad A guy, okay, yeah, we're somebody who's played a couple games in the majors and knows just the routine of getting called up and what to do next. But at the same time, every minor leaguer has not played in the majors at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
So
all these vaunted veteran Pablo Ozuna didn't play in the majors at some point. And still, he's... Yeah, or Dave Borkowski, the immortal Dave Borkowski.
I would imagine you're looking for not just things to discuss about the team you cover, but unique things about the team that you cover.
And
in this case, maybe that's just what they're like. Well, the Phillies, you know, hey, they don't have a lot of minor league guys with major league experience. And I don't necessarily, when I think, what are the problems with the team I follow, that does not jump up as even a perspective problem. But if you tell me it is one, then
I'll get concerned.
I guess we'll talk about it. It's like,
you know. Just getting so crazy. Oh, no.
What if they don't know where the bus gets off? How are they going to know where the stadium is? Oh, God.
Oh, they went into the wrong locker room again. This always happens the first time they play baseball.
Well, I can't get out. The doors lock automatically once you walk into that locker room. That's why they call it the locker room.
Well, the rest of this paragraph, I gotta say this before I can't talk. He says, last year's six position players, okay, right. Pitchers Les Walrond, RJ Swindle, and Jay Happ also were pressed into action at pivotal points during the campaign.
See, I'm glad you said that, because RJ Swindle is the one I thought you were talking about. I looked it up early on when you said it was Les Walrond.
I knew you knew RJ Swindle. Come on.
That is who I thought you meant. And it is hilarious how many times RJ Swindle and Les Walrond have been mentioned in the same breath, as I realized just searching Les Walrond on Twitter, because they are both that same level of guy in Philly's lore. You know, nothing against them personally, but they just, that's just where they wound up.
But RJ Swindle has like that cool name. Like,
yeah,
Swindle.
That's true. I mean, JD Hammer has a great name, and it's very upsetting that he has not had a more successful Phillies career for me.
Agreed.
Also, I would imagine for him.
but at this point, unfortunately, Les Walrond was no longer on the Phillies, and in fact, would never play for another major league team again. His last appearance in the majors was in 2008, before he played a little bit for some minor league teams here and there, and then in Japan for a bit, a little more long-lasting career in Japan, which is cool, and then paid for his own ticket with the Mets and didn't get on. But there was a time where he saw the bright lights of the stadium, Justin, and really did a bad job. So I think we should probably talk about that after the break. Welcome back. So Les Walrond's 2008 was not his shining moment. We're going to be talking about his worst game, his second appearance for the Phillies against the Pittsburgh. Okay. So his first appearance with the Phillies, why I was talking about the Marlins early on, was because it was a bad inning for him, for sure. It was also his first appearance. Now, his worst appearance for the Phillies was not that. It was 2 days later, August 8th. I do love the day's rest counter on Baseball Reference. That's new to me. Where before he comes in, he has had 99 days of rest because he has never pitched in the majors for the Phillies. but unfortunately, he only had 2 days of rest for his next game, which shows why he was worse. But he pitched five games in a row that year, and all of them losses. Oh, he only took the loss once in the game we're going to be talking about. But
oh God, how long was he just in for, like an inning or something, or was
.1 inning. This his first appearance. 1.1 in our appearance we'll talk about today. 2.2, two innings. So he's kind of mop up, long relief, weird. There's no rhyme or reason for when he was used. Like,
okay.
So he won. He finally did win, and he actually got the win against the Nationals on September 28th in his last game with the Phillies and his last game in the majors, which is kind of nice.
That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. And it was his second cup of coffee with the Phillies. He was sent down on August 16th, called back up when rosters expanded, I guess, on September 19th. But they pitched him in the fifth and sixth innings. Then his first game, he was pitched in the seventh inning for one inning. This game, he was pitched in the 11th and 12th of a tie game. It's very strange. Like, just not a lot of rhyme or reason to where Charlie Manuel was thinking this guy slotted in, or Rich Doobie or whoever, right?
I was going to say, Charlie Manuel's not making that decision.
It's Rich Doobie, yeah. Rich Doobie is, like, so cool because he just, like, he has a set of pitchers and it just works for him. He's like, okay, seventh inning, Clay Country's, or like sixth inning, Clay Country's coming in. He pitches into the seventh, then I get JC Romero in. This is great. And then when there's new guys, he's like, okay, I got no idea what I'm doing. I'm just going to totally malfunction now. You go into the fourth inning.
Yeah, and in 2008, Charlie had both Rich Doobie and Jimmy Williams as his bench coach. And I think Jimmy Williams didn't come back in 2009, and I forget where, but it was literally referenced that Jimmy Williams was basically like co-manager of the Phillies at this point.
Incredible.
And, you know, yeah, it's Charlie Manuel. He's like, it's not a slight against him, but Charlie Manuel is you know, very into hitting.
Yeah.
He's very interested in hitting. He's worked with a ton of good hitters. He's made adequate hitters into good hitters.
Just does not care about pitching.
He is a professor of hitting, and you know, I'm sure he can, you know, handle pitching if he has to, but I think we all know that he largely let the pitching coach kind of,
oh yeah,
be the pitching coach.
Yeah, and when it worked, it was great, and when it didn't work, it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's not as insightful as I thought it was. so his worst game is the one we're going to be covering, but his best game, in his best game, Les Walrond added .152 winning percentage added, which is cool, or winning probability added, excuse me. In this game, it was -2.17.
Hot dang.
It doesn't work out for him.
So when you say negative, to start off a number.
Yeah. It means it's
bad. Bums
bad.
Me out.
Yeah, no, yeah, it shouldn't make you super happy. This Pirates team actually is, like, way more fun than the Marlins team that I teased before, because there are a bunch of hitters on there that were really good well after this moment. There are a bunch that were never all that great. So this team, down the list, Freddy Sanchez. Remember that guy? He was fun.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Doug Minkiewicz. Yep. Nate McLouth, the lesser McLouth.
Oh man, I don't know why, but I think he had one or two good seasons where I was just like, Nate McLouth, that's a get.
Yeah,
the Orioles got him.
Hope the Phillies get
and
him.
I was like, yeah, so that's somebody that would be fine to have on your bench. It'd be good.
He has big league experience. Ryan Domit, remember that guy? Couldn't catch,
yes.
But he was that catcher. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna leave out who's hitting in the five spot, and I'm gonna ask you to guess, because he is, I would say, the most infamous snubbed hitter in the last 12 years of Phillies baseball. He's on the Pirates right now, snubbed by the team, and people will not forget it. But I'm going to leave it blank for now. Steve Pierce, who, of course, was later very good with the Orioles. Jose Bautista, who was never heard from again, I don't think.
Wait. Wasn't Steve Pierce, like, the World Series MVP, like, for the Red Sox?
Was he? He was, I mean, he was really good.
Yeah, yeah,
he was
in really 2018.
Good. Okay, yeah, he was really good with the O's, and then he went to the, after his breakout season with the O's, he went to the Red Sox, yeah.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure okay. that,
yeah. Yeah, he got really yeah. good. At this point, he wasn't.
I would say that he had a great World Series. I will say that.
No, did you, his, let's see, so his year wasn't all that great, but the, let's see, Steve Pierce's year with the Orioles was, like, legitimately very good.
Yeah, no, I believe that. Yeah, my dad is a big Orioles fan. He was, and you're right. He was, but he was never, he never reached, like, superstar status or anything, but that's certainly not a statement about talent.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I am
so,
wrong about
that. Yeah, he was, I mean, when he was with the Orioles, in his really good year with the Orioles, where, like, people were like, okay, this guy is extremely legit, he hit .293 with a .373 on base and .556 slug. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, he was extremely legit. But mostly he's a journeyman. Jose Bautista, of course, as I said, did nothing, disappeared into the ether. No one ever heard of him again. of course not. And then Luis Rivas, who I don't know, and Paul Mahomme, who is the classic guy who pitches and you just kind of expect he will either stymie any team who is the Phillies and be completely destroyed by any team who is not.
We just talked about him on Continued Success.
Oh, yeah.
In 2010, the Phillies were having a rough stretch. They played the Pirates for four games, and I think of the four games, they did manage to beat the crap out of Paul Mahomme, but they got beaten by Ross Ohlendorf.
Oh, no, Rolandorf.
Who had, like, an ERA over six and, like, a whole mess of
future
other
Philly
Pirates
Rolandorf.
Starters. You know, all those Pirates starters who were just like, oh, I got to the ballpark on time. I'm not sure what else you want to ask
the
him.
The Pirates
about
are
today.
So bad. This it's just so rough. I'm going to make you guess who was the hitter I'm talking about, the most infamously snubbed hitter
in Phillies history
in the last 12 years of Phillies history, who went on to do great things, but not with the Phillies. Was briefly on the Phillies, snubbed for someone else, and people will not let you forget it.
This is tough. So he was on the Pirates in 2008.
Mm-hmm. He was on
then joined the Phillies.
I'll give you a hint. He was on the Phillies in 2009. And he was a late addition, replaced on the roster for the World Series for someone from the Giants.
Is it a pitcher or a position player?
Position player. Outfielder.
John, what is that guy?
Well, no, you're thinking of the person who got replaced. Thinking of the person who replaced the guy. Who is the person who got replaced? It's not John Bowker. John Bowker is who replaced him.
That is who I was
Who's
thinking.
The guy?
Nah, just tell me.
Brandon Moss, baby.
Oh, Brandon Moss. That's right. He's more of an iron pig than a Philly in my brain, mm-hmm. but that wouldn't have helped. I wouldn't have gotten
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, it's so. Okay. And then on the Phillies, pretty much the same as we talked about before, except Worth is on this team. So is Chris Cost. And Joe Blanton's pitching today. And it would be quite a day for pitching because the Phillies and the Pirates unfortunately for the Phillies, who are 62-53 and just looking to eke out every win because it's Red August, baby, where we have to catch the Mets. By,
so catchy.
Yeah, thank you. Red August. Could not get anything going against the Pirates, who were 53-62. Obviously not, you know, any sort of – they weren't looking at the postseason at this point. Mahomme was having an okay year. He was pitching a .376 ERA. They had some decent decent pitchers on their team, including a non-injured Sean Burnett. You know, it's fine, but this is not a good team. Jack Wilson was on the team as well, but this is not a team that you should be losing to if you are the Phillies at this point, and you will be later winning the World Series. But by the 11th inning, all goose eggs. For the Phillies, we've had Joe Blanton, Bad Chad Durbin, J.C. Romero, Brad Lidge, who pitched .1 inning with such a Lidge line. One hit, two walks, no earned runs.
That's a 2009 Lidge line. 2008 Lidge line was
you're right.
Jarringly bad for a 2008 Lidge line.
It's Lidge, but he's not going in for a save. The closers always get
weird. So he's just taking the night off, basically.
Well, yeah, they're always so weird when it's a tie. It's like, yeah, just like I'll just do anything. I can do whatever I want. Like no.
Brad Lidge goes out there with like a beach chair and a Hawaiian shirt and just, you know, he's got a drink and a
Brad,
and a piece
please
of fruit.
Please, you have to be wearing the uniform or we forfeit. Forfeit?
Nah,
it's not even a save.
I get dressed for a save situation and nothing else.
I got
classic Brad Lidge.
I'm working on my perfect season and also my degree in biblical anthropology.
He's double majoring.
Les Warren and Clay Condry were the pitchers, but through those 11 innings, Blanton, Durbin, Romero, and Lidge had just locked it down. No runs, only, let's see, two hits. Blanton went seven innings with only one hit, two walks, and seven strikeouts. Unfortunately, the genius Paul Mahol matched him. Seven innings, five hits, three walks, 10 strikeouts. Classic 2008 Phillies. Striking out a bunch, getting hits, and then striking out. And walking, too, I guess. But ultimately, this game came down to Les Walrond in the 12th. Les was brought in, our friend Leslie, was brought in at the top of the 12th. Pirates are batting. They're tied 0-0. And Les is facing the heart of the order.
Of the mighty Pirates.
Ryan Domit is the first to come up. 1-1, 1-1 count. Cracks a double. Double to center field. Line drive to deep left field center field. I just did my dad's Harry Callis. That's always what my dad does when he impersonates Harry Callis. I don't know why.
He just changes his voice to another voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
But anyway, he doubles the center field, which is amazing that it's nice that it was center field, but it is amazing that it didn't go out in Citizens Bank Park. Cause like, that seems like a line drive to deep center field. That is a good chance.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
I mean, Domit hits hard.
Especially in August when they consider it hitting season.
Ooh, so you said the name of the show. next up, Brandon Moss, he could have been a hero for the Phillies. He grounds out. So, you know, Domit's on third. Les Walrond is in a spot, but he could get out of this and this could be okay. We could have a game going into the 13th, after the Phillies, go 1-2-3 in the bottom of the 12th. They almost certainly will. However, Steve Pierce comes up and decides to build a little bit or borrow a little bit from his year with the Orioles and doubles to left field. Domit has scored now, and it is the first run of the game. then, again, borrowing from the future, Les Walrond intentionally walks Jose Bautista.
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, who even is that?
He's no one. And then, unfortunately, is replaced by Clay Condry. This is how insignificant this player is. It's so hard. His worst
this
game.
This is probably the briefest dirty inning we've ever had.
The worst game he had, he pitched 1.1 innings. So he pitched that inning, and then he also pitched. I gave him short shrift. He pitched the top of the 11th as well when he led up a single to Freddie Sanchez. Bunt pop fly to Doug Minkiewicz, strikeout looking Nate McLouth, and base runner out advancing for Ryan Domit. So he threw Sanchez out, but then fell apart in the top of the 12th. It is the briefest dirty inning because he really only gave up one run, but it is like a perfect, it's a perfect Walrond pairing where like the failure and the sort of like insignificance of it matters so much more than the success. Like he pitched essentially clean. He got one hit, but like it was a good inning, and he erased his base runner in the top of the 11th in a major league park against a major league roster. Kind of, it's the Pirates, but like really, all we remember is his terrible, terrible failure in the top of the 12th before Clay Condry came in, shaking his head and saying, "Like you'll never be on the postseason roster, Walrond."
Not like me, Clay Convery.
I'm a hero to these people.
Philly superstar and forever remembered. Do you think Les Walren has a ring? Is that how it works?
I don't know. I would hope so. He wasn't on the team at the end of the... Well, maybe he was. I know he was claimed when the Phillies dropped him, but like... I don't know.
But does that matter? Because Adam Eaton got a ring. Yeah. Obviously, he played a little more substantial of a role, but like...
I hope he does. I hope Les Walren got a ring. I feel like you throw...
I feel like they give a lot of people rings. Even if it's not like the same one that the like main players got. I know they do different ones for like staff members and stuff, but like, you know, he was on the team. He was on the team in 2008. He should probably have one. I would say. I think.
Oh, wow, there's a quote by Les Walren. Ah, oh, this is great. I found a Les Walren quote. But no, there's nothing about him getting a ring or not getting a ring. But I would think he did. Yeah. But that's the end of Les Walren's career, basically. He had that next game where he got the win, and then he never pitched in the majors again. But I did want to tell you, Justin... He did start a game. He wasn't always a reliever. He started a game. And do you know who that game was started against? Just go out on a limb. Why would I say this?
It's a crazy, crazy thing to say. I'm going to say the 2008 Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, Jesus.
Did I miff it?
You miffed it badly. It was the 2006 Philadelphia Phillies when he was a member of the Cubs.
Nuts.
Now,
can't believe I didn't get that.
Now, Walren took the loss on this one. In fact, the only win Walren ever had was the one I talked to you about. And I'm wrong. He did start two games with the Cubs. So the Cubs saw something in him. But he lost both of those games, or lost one and took the loss on one, lost in the other one. Left that year with an ERA of 6.23. Nothing really to write home about. But... he did his best against this Phillies lineup. In 2006, like, okay, there were some problems. It was still an up-and-coming team in a lot of ways. But this is like
But they were expecting that team to make the play. Like, you were not crazy for thinking that's a team that's going to make the postseason. Absolutely.
And it's a team that can hit. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's a hitting team. Like, I did have to laugh because Juan Pierre is at the top of the Cubs order. And, like, I then thought, like, oh, he'll be a Philly at some point.
Honestly, that was my first thought when you're like, who was on the Pirates at this point? Who was a future Philly?
Is that what I sound like to you?
Was good for everyone except for the Phillies. Oh, and I was like, was Juan Pierre on the
was
Pirates?
Was Juan Pierre on the Pirates?
Was Juan Pierre on the Pirates?
Just like having
at all?
A deep, wonderful voice. And mine's like, who was on the other team?
Well, I don't know. I'm too busy making several mathematical calculations to cure cancer, but...
For the record, Juan Pierre was never on the Pirates.
No, that's weird. He is a very Pirates guy.
Yeah, right.
Henry Blanco, was he ever on the Phillies as a catcher? Andres Blanco was.
So.
Okay. Mike Lieberthal was still on the Phillies in this game. Wow. Anyway, it's a team that can hit. Walren started this game because as the excuse me, I have to find the actual, oh, there it is. As the Chicago Daily Herald says, Bruce Miles of the Chicago Daily Herald says, Jerome Williams was a flat out no. Sean Marshall.
Wow, that's not too far off the Jerome Williams who came to the Phillies in, 2015?
He was also a flat-out no.
Maintained that status for many years.
Just lived that truth. Sean Marshall.
Big old no. No thanks.
No, flatly no. I would prefer we forfeit the game.
And for the fifth starter position for the Phillies this year, hard pass.
just no one. But let's see what we
just
can
do. Just nothing.
Sean Marshall needs another rehab start. Back when Sean Marshall was still a
I think he's one rehab start away from getting it together too. So
the Cubs will reward journeyman left-hander Les Walren with a start on ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball tonight in the series finale with the Cardinals. So that must have been his first start, but later he started against the Phillies. I just loved the idea of Jerome Williams with a flat out no. Sean Marshall needs another rehab start. And then at the bottom of this article, this is one of those ones that's split into two. So it says, "Hey man, that's cold. The Cubs are getting national attention and it's not the kind they like. John Heyman, writing for SI.com, lists the Cubs as the number three disappointment of baseball behind the Cardinals and the Indians."
Ooh, tough year for the Midwest.
It's just hard. But Warren lost that start against the Cardinals, unfortunately. He lost the start against the Phillies as well. He actually did all right against the Phils. He struck out six. He did walk five, so that wild reputation did catch up to him. Only two earned runs and only three hits, though. So, like, he gave his team a chance to win. Unfortunately, his team was the 2006 Cubs, who had as many wins in, on September 20th as the Pirates that we talked about before had on August 8th. So not great. not good. So in any case, you know, basically he struck out a lot of Phillies. He did a good job. He, like, in the bottom of the first, all of the outs, like, Shane Victorino got a double off of him, but who doesn't? Chase Utley walked fine, but he struck out Rollins, Howard, and Jeff Conine. You know, he,
all right,
that's not terrible.
No, that's two. That's one rookie phenom and one seasoned hitter.
I feel like I could strike out Ryan Howard, though. Think I could?
I mean, I see what you're getting at, and you know, on the right day.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You probably could.
That's right. But you know, he hit some. He basically ran into some trouble with walks, and when he let up his runs when let's see here, he was unfortunately let up a double after two walks to Mike Lieberthal. He let up a double to Lieberthal and then a single to Abe Nunez. And that was all she wrote after those two runs scored. Incredible that two walks, Conine and Burrell both walked. And because they are both slow as molasses, Lieberthal doubled to deep left and only one person scored.
It's funny you mentioned Lieberthal was still with the team in 2006 because that's one of my favorite, in a bad way, stats of the Phillies all times is that Mike Lieberthal, you know, was with the team from 1994 to 2006, so missed out exactly perfectly on both postseason.
Oh, poor guy.
This poor guy just futilely doubling against the Les Walrens of the league as best he could, nursing a couple of bad knees. And, with just the worst luck in the world, missing out on both the Phillies' playoff appearances.
Man, that's such a drag.
Booked his awesome Phillies career. I love Mike Lieberthal, and I think that just absolutely sucks.
Me too. That's going to depress me all night. But honestly, the reason I wanted to end with this game, he didn't win. He only won the one game, and I didn't want to cover that because that seems pandering, honestly. It's a good story that he won his last game in the major leagues. He even got the win, right? But, like, what I like about this game for Les Walrond is, like, if you squint, you could see the pitcher that people thought he was going to be. Like, five walks and six strikeouts is not great. But you say, like, well, they only got two hits or three hits. And, like, if he narrows down that control a little bit, that's a serviceable three or four pitcher. I mean, on the other side, Brett Myers struck out 12 and only walked three. So, like, you know, he's not going to be Brett Myers at his peak. And thank God so few people are. But on the other hand, like, he could have been a pitcher, and it's just like he never was able to put it together. It's that thing that was said in that early thing where it's like, well, he'll learn to pitch. He might not start the whole time. He'll get some innings here or there. And that just was his life. And now, like, he is just a guy someone has to, like, look up to prove exists.
That's who we talk about on this show. We talk about the people who couldn't quite put it together. Yep. But there is something that Les Walrond might still be known for. I couldn't find the statistical columns on Lehigh Valley Iron Pig franchise records. But I think it is worth noting that almost 12 years ago to the day, we are one day later than 12 years ago to the day, that in 2008, Les Walrond set the Iron Pigs record by striking out 17 Louisville bats in a single game. at opening night at Coca-Cola. Sorry. Obviously, it wasn't opening night at Coca-Cola Park on July 6th. But yeah, he has the franchise record. And this was the 2008 was the Iron Pig's first season in existence. So they were setting a lot of franchise records, obviously. But he set that franchise record that lasted for at least 11 years. I don't know who the current holder is, if there is one, but I feel like it's likely he still does hold that record. And
wow, 17 is amazing.
In 2018, Phillies prospect Brandon Liebrandt, he broke the Iron Pigs franchise record with his scoreless streak, where he threw 29 and two-thirds innings without allowing a run. The former record to that point in 2018 had been 27 innings, held by left-handed pitcher Les Walren in the inaugural season of 2008 for the Iron Pigs. So he went down to AAA, and he set a bunch of records for that team that had just started. Records that weren't just because he was the first one to do it in an Iron Pigs uniform. Records that were really good and took at least 10 years for the ones that aren't standing anymore to be broken. So impressive. An impressive pitcher that, like you said, just wound up not being able to get it together.
It's really a shame. Like, it's what's cool about the whole learning about these guys, right? Like, after the fact, is I don't know. Like, what's cool about that is like, you know about these guys, right? Like, you know about your various baby aces or whatever. Where like they are, like Brody Colvin is a good example where it's like no one's gonna know who Brody Colvin is in 10 years, right? It's like it's knowledge. No one knows who he is now. It's knowledge that just sort of kind of exists. But the, like when he's coming up, when they're actually happening, when it's like progressing in real time, you're like, well, actually, wow. Like, that's pretty cool. This guy is going to be very good at baseball, I think. And then he's not. You're just like, well, I guess I was wrong. But to look at it in the past and be like, oh, he was never good at baseball. But then to dig a little deeper and be like, no, people actually super thought he was going to be good at baseball. Like, and why you shouldn't see you? Why. You know?
This guy threw 27 straight scoreless innings. He threw the first complete game in the history of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs and the first shutout in the history of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. It's funny you mentioned Andy Tracy earlier. He was the manager of the Iron Pigs when this happened.
Sure he was.
Speaking of guys who didn't get it together.
Like, Andy Tracy, 80-year veteran of the minor
it's easy to get excited about prospects, and I know on other podcasts Liz and I have been very harsh on our summation of prospects. We really need to get a prospect person to be part of the conversation on the Good Fight podcast family, because we're very, it's not that we don't like prospects, it's that we've been burned so many times. You're gonna get a Les Walren situation so much more than you're going to get an Aaron Nola situation. Yeah. Somebody who comes up, looks really promising, and on each gradual level that they hits that same level of success. And it tells you how difficult development is and how in some cases luck plays a big part. I think we all know that. And that has made me much more detached from holding on to prospects when it comes to trading for players who are at major league talent now. I didn't like saying goodbye to Sixto Sanchez, but I got to tell you, getting the very real talent of JT Realmuto made me forget about the possible major league talent of Sixto Sanchez very easily.
Same as with the prospects that were traded to get. Not that he did an amazing job, but Cabrera, right? Like, this isn't like, why am I forgetting Cabrera's first name?
Asdrubal.
Thank you. I was like, it's not Miguel Cabrera, but my brain was just like, it's Miguel Cabrera that they traded for. It's like, come on, no, can't be.
We both knew it wasn't Miguel Cabrera. We both thought Miguel Cabrera simultaneously.
Famous Philly Miguel Cabrera. they're fun to think about, but baseball's so weird. Like, it just, like, things fall apart a lot.
The what-ifs will kill.
Yeah, what's funny about what-ifs is, like, they feel like they'll hurt forever when you trade them, or, like, when you're like, oh, poof. Mets fans are freaking out about Kalenic, right? Jared Kalenic, who they traded to the Mets traded to the Mariners. And it's like, yeah, he might be really good. And then again, maybe he won't be, and you won't even remember his name enough to do it. I told you so on someone. Like, it'll just be, it truly will be like Les Walrond. And you'll be like, was that a person, or did you make up those syllables one after another?
And for some people, not in baseball specifically, not being able to say "I told you so" is the biggest tragedy of all of this.
Yeah, no, for sure. I keep like, I so wanted to yell at my parents and relatives when they were happy about trading for Hunter Pence. I probably told this story, and guess what? Like, I was never able to tell them that we were wrong for trading for Hunter Pence. Like, none of those. Even Domingo Santana hasn't like probably earned as much value to a team as Pence did in his brief time in Philadelphia. So, like, I don't know.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, you blew that one, Trev.
I did?
Frankly.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I thought you meant he had.
Oh, no, no,
like,
no.
Are
no.
you going to...
No, no, is not even... Santana not at all.
Way better than I thought?
Yeah, I have a little news for you on that front, Trev. Ladies and gentlemen, Domingo Santana.
Oh, no. Oh, no. He's just in my house.
You're in big trouble, friend.
Oh, no. How'd you find me?
Oh, no. Yeah. That's well, hey, look, Les Walrond had a more successful professional baseball career than certainly anyone on this podcast.
And oh, yeah.
A great majority of the population of human beings.
And honestly, like, and this is one of the times I want to say, because, you know, who knows? I don't think he's going to hear the podcast by any means. But, like, look, like, I just want to say... I think this is all for me like a celebration of the guy. Like, I think it's very cool that he existed and he helped the 2008 Phillies. Like, he got one of those wins and every win counted at the end of that year. Like, that's,
hey, that,
you know,
that's why we do this. It's because a lot of these guys are going to be lost in time.
And it's like, it's an appreciation. It's like, I appreciate this guy a lot more. Like, I will remember Les Walrond now because I thought about him for a while. And like, that's cool. 2008.
Exactly.
Story. He's important.
And unfortunately, the things you talk about when you talk about these players, they're obscure for a reason. So,
yeah,
you know.
Unfortunately. Right?
And also, the podcast is about what the podcast is about. But yeah, at the same time, yeah, we will always now remember Les Walrond when we see his name. Like, you know, we've bookmarked his page in the Phillies archives.
Cool.
And that's really why we do this. And I think we go into this every time as we're wrapping up. But I think it's worth reminding people, because when you do a podcast on the worst, dumbest, funniest, or most obscure innings of all time in Phillies history, you got to remind people time and again, this isn't because we're down on the Phillies. It's because we're very interested in every corner of the Phillies franchise. And there's a lot of corners. There's a lot. And there's a Les Walrond in every one of them.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. No, totally right. And like, it's why the podcast is interesting, in my opinion.
I agree. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dirty Inning.
Don't worry, Justin will be doing it next time. You don't have to worry about me. You don't have to worry about old Trev anymore.
Don't forget to not listen to this part of the podcast and subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hittin' Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning. We'll have another episode soon enough about, you know, what I just described, the funniest, dumbest, worst, or most obscure innings in Phillies history. And if you're feeling up for it, don't forget to subscribe to the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season, where there'll be a new episode of Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones later this week. We have new content going up every month. There's new content going up. There's movie reviews, baseball movie reviews with me and Liz Rocher. John Stolness is doing a series on the 1980 Phillies that are having their 40th anniversary this year. So whether there's baseball on the field or not, you get access to the Good Fight podcast feed. And for $5 extra, you get access to even more Phillies content. So you can certainly get your fill, whether the players are practicing or being subjected to the utterly incompetent management.
Hey, one more negative test, and Scott Kingery gets to come back, folks.
just a real mess out there. So, if you enjoy baseball and you enjoy the Phillies, or even if you just enjoy
what is
baseball,
wrong with you?
This is a great situation to be a part of. So, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on The Dirty.
Bye-bye. Air.